Good morning. Good morning. The Education Quality Subcommittee will now come to order. For the record, please remember to turn on your microphones for roll call. Kendall, please call the roll.
Chair Trabolzi.
Here.
Vice Chair Rizzo.
Here.
Ranking Member Benjamin.
Present.
Representative Alvarez.
Here.
Representative Baker.
Here.
Representative Beltran.
Here.
Representative Burfield.
Here.
Representative Kennedy.
Here.
Representative Casello.
Here.
Representative Daniels.
Here.
Representative Fine.
Here.
Representative Franklin.
Here.
Representative Gant.
Here.
Representative Garcia.
Present.
Representative Giolombardo is excused. Representative Gonzalez-Pittman.
Present.
Representative Tomko.
Here.
Representative Yeager.
Here.
Thank you, Kendall. Let the record show that a quorum is present. As always, please remember to silence all electronic devices. If there is anyone in the audience wishing to speak on a bill, please make sure to complete an appearance card and hand it to a member of the sergeant's office. Good morning again. We have a full agenda today. What I would like to do is just set a few ground rules just to get started. As I said, packed agenda. We want to make sure that we get to everyone's questions and have time for full and robust debate as we have throughout the entirety of this committee. So I ask that you keep your questions clean and concise. And when you are making remarks from the audience, we ask that you be brief and you be respectful. I would like to take a small liberty here and welcome Andy Treadwell from St. Lucie County to our committee today. He is the president of our Pruitt campus for Indian River State College, a great friend, and his son is here this week with the Page and Messenger program. We're so happy to have you here. So we're going to start out with Representative Salzman. You are welcome to recognize and explain PCS for House Bill 633.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I am enjoying watching you be chair. I just have to say that. This is so fun. So PCS for HB 633 is an act relating to class size. This all-American bill repeals the penalty for schools that exceed the class size maximums. Further, the bill also ensures that our active duty military dependents have access to all schools in the district as they transfer to Florida, no matter what the time is that they transfer in the year. And that is the bill, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Salzman, for that all-American bill. Members, are there any questions on the bill? Representative Gant?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning, Representative. Is there a maximum class size that would trigger a penalty under this bill?
You're recognized.
Thank you for that question. That would be outside the scope of this bill. This bill removes the class size penalty under the statute that we are repealing, but there are accountability measures still in place.
Follow up, Representative Gant. Representative Franklin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thanks for bringing this bill, Representative. Do we track in any way what the class sizes are at what type of school so we can kind of understand the impact on learning potentially?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for that question. The Department of Education tracks all class size reports. They actually require those in October of each year, and as well as detailed information, not just on the over class size, but under class size to calculate FTEs in the district.
Do you have a follow-up, Representative Franklin? Representative Benjamin.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative. You spoke about accountability measures. Can you tell me what some of those accountability measures are?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for that question. That's outside of the scope of this bill, but I can get back with you after committee.
Thank you.
Members, are there any other questions on the bill? Is there any public testimony on the bill? No public testimony. Members, we're now in debate. Is there anyone wishing to debate on this bill? Representative Beltran, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Rep, for our conversation yesterday. I did look at the class size amendment, and it imposes no obligation on the legislature to impose any penalty. In fact, it puts the financial burden on the state for complying with the class size amendment. I think the class size amendment's important. It's part of the Constitution. We all swore to it. It's not clear that we have any obligation to impose financial penalties. I could see a situation where the school board is in financial distress, and that's why they're not in compliance with the class size amendment, and maybe imposing a further financial burden on them would not be appropriate. And I'm assured by you that and others that there are adequate accountability measures. And so I'm concerned that we follow the Constitution and the class size amendment, but I'm going to vote for this this bill based upon that. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there any other debate on this bill? Seeing none, Representative Salzman, you're welcome to close on your bill.
Madam Chair, I'll waive close.
Thank you. Having closed on the bill, Kendall, please call the roll.
Representatives Alvarez.
Yay.
Baker.
Yes.
Beltran.
Yes.
Benjamin.
Yes.
Herfield.
Yes.
Kennedy.
Yes.
Casello.
Yes.
Daniels.
Yes.
Fine.
Yes.
Franklin.
Yes.
Gant.
Yes.
Garcia. Gonzalez Pittman.
Yes.
Rizzo.
Yes.
Tomko.
Yes.
Yeager.
Yes.
Chair Trabolsi.
Yes. Members, by your vote, House Bill 633 will be reported favorably. Thank you, Representative. Members, next, House Bill 1035 by Representative Gonzalez Pittman relating to teacher training and conduct. Representative Gonzalez Pittman, you are recognized to explain House Bill 1035. She's making her way around. Run, Forrest, run. We'll do it again. Representative Gonzalez Pittman, you are recognized to explain House Bill 1035.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, Vice Chair Rizzo, and Ranking Member Benjamin. Today, I am presenting House Bill 1035, entitled Teacher Training and Conduct, or more affectionately known as the Teacher Bill of Rights. As set forth in Florida's Constitution, the education of Florida's children is a fundamental value of the people of Florida and the paramount duty of the state. We must fulfill Florida's constitutional responsibility to its citizens and provide the correct structure to secure and maintain high-quality teachers. This bill seeks to eliminate or reduce unnecessary or duplicate training requirements for teachers by requiring the Department of Education to review and provide recommendations on eliminating training requirements. The bill also increases the rights of teachers to control the classroom by providing the teachers two avenues to seek relief if a teacher is directed by their school or their school district's administration to violate law. First, they may request the Commissioner of Education appoint a special magistrate to examine the facts of their situation and provide a recommended resolution. This mirrors a similar process that was put in place for potential violations of the parental rights last legislative season. Or the teacher may pursue a civil remedy through the court system where they may be entitled to damages and reasonable attorney fees. Finally, it creates a rebuttable presumption that the actions by a teacher or school staff were necessary to maintain safety in the educational setting. The rebuttable presumption does not apply in cases of excessive force or cruel and unusual punishment. In concert with Florida being the number one state in the nation for education freedom, we must also take the time to empower our teachers who mentor and educate our youth. From personal experience, I can attest to the fact that teachers need more rights within their classroom and the school districts. Across Florida, we see countless examples of unnecessary, redundant, mandatory trainings, disproportionate control of the classroom by districts, schools, and principals, and lack of emphasis on the ability of the teacher to maintain a safe and secure educational environment. In the great state of Florida, we must protect the rights of our teachers and allow them the freedoms to educate their classroom in the way that they feel necessary within the scope of Florida's education laws and rules. After speaking with teachers in the state of Florida, it was brought to my attention that some of the statutory required trainings are burdensome. And with this bill, we will identify the trainings that may no longer be necessary, so teachers can aim their focus on the classroom and our children. This legislation is paramount in providing teachers with the avenues to defend themselves and their classrooms if the school or school districts are guiding them to violate Florida law. And finally, it's to protect our teachers' safety, allowing them to take actions to ensure a safe environment for themselves and their students. The teachers should be empowered to have control over their classroom. Please vote yes on my legislation today.
Thank you, Representative. Members, are there any questions on the bill? Representative Gant.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And good morning, Representative Gonzalez Pittman. Thank you for speaking with me today. I do have those follow-up questions for you. Regarding the magistrate process, the special magistrate process, for lines 82 to 86, it says teachers and other members. Does that specifically relate to staff members that are employed at that particular school?
You're recognized.
Thank you. Yes, ma'am.
Do you have a follow-up, Representative Gant?
Yes, I do. Regarding the special magistrate process, is there a hearing process when the teacher makes that request to the DOE?
You're recognized.
Thank you. The bill affirms that the teacher's right to direct the classroom instruction in accordance with the rule of law. The bill authorizes a teacher who is directed by his or her school district to take action contrary to the law or rule to either request the Commissioner of Education to appoint a special magistrate to review the dispute or bring action against the school district to obtain the declaratory of the injunctive relief. If the teacher requests a special magistrate, the special magistrate must be appointed, conduct a fact-finding, and make a recommendation for the resolution of the dispute by the State Board of Education within 30 days. The State Board of Education must accept or reject the recommendation of the special magistrate at the next regularly scheduled meeting, but no sooner than 7 days or no later than 30 days from the recommended decision is received by the State Board of Education. And the special magistrate must be a lawyer in good standing with the Florida Bar and have at least 5 years of administrative law experience. And the bill requires the school district to bear the cost associated with the work of the special magistrate.
Representative Gant, do you have a follow-up question?
I do. Is there a limit to how many requests a teacher can make per school year for a special magistrate to be appointed?
You're recognized.
Not in this bill.
Do you have one more question, Representative Gant?
Yes, I do. For the notification, if a teacher refers the student to the principal, for the notification, does the notification have to be in writing from the principal to the teacher regarding the follow-up disciplinary action?
You're recognized.
Thank you for the question. I believe the law allows the communication to take place however the district communicates between the administration and the teachers.
Thank you. Are there any other questions on the bill? Any public testimony? Madison Wheelis. Barney Bishop. Wave in support. Thank you, Barney Bishop. Members, we are now in debate. Is anyone wishing to debate the bill? Representative Gant?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you again for our conversation yesterday about your bill. I think there are really great aspects about the bill. I will be up on it today. The part about the special magistrate and that process, I would like to work with you on that and how that can be just defined a little more so that teachers can really understand what their rights are. So thank you for, again, conferring with me before today.
Thank you, Representative Gant. Representative Beltran, you're recognized in debate.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Rep, for our conversation as well yesterday. I did want to focus briefly on a portion of the bill we haven't discussed this morning yet, which is lines 108 to 120. This is a part regulating student discipline, and this bill tweaks that somewhat, but from the, I guess, the language in existing law, it's not clear to me. It looks like if once a teacher sends a student to the principal's office, the principal is required to impose some form of punishment, whether or not they think the student's guilty. And it says it kind of limits the circumstances where the principal can depart downward from the teacher's recommended recommended discipline. The way I read the both the existing language and the bill seems to, if you have had disruptive behavior before, then the principal needs to impose whatever punishment that the teacher recommends. And it seems to limit you to departing downward only for a student without a history of disruptive behavior. And really, there's no, doesn't seem to be any redress at all if the principal doesn't think the student's guilty. So I understand the other, there, I think there's other good parts of the bill I'd like to, and I'm not sure this is the bill so much as existing law and the interaction of some of the things we're doing here, but I'd like to work on that with you before we get to civil justice. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Beltran. Is there any further debate on the bill? With no further debate, Representative Gonzalez-Pittman, you are recognized to close on your bill.
Thank you. I'd just like to thank you all for listening to this bill today. I am very happy to be sponsoring a bill that empowers our Florida teachers. We will adjust the duplicative training requirements so our teachers can maintain their focus in the classroom, increase the rights of teachers to seek relief if they're directed to violate law, and ensure that teachers have the power and ability to maintain a safe environment within their classrooms. And I ask again for you all to vote favorably in support of the bill.
Thank you. Having closed on the bill, Kendall, please call the roll.
Representatives Alvarez.
Yay.
Baker.
Yes.
Beltran.
Yes.
Benjamin.
Yes.
Burfield.
Yes.
Kennedy.
Yes.
Casello.
Yes.
Daniels.
Yes.
Fine.
Yes.
Yes.
Franklin.
Yes.
Gant.
Yes.
Garcia. Gonzalez-Pittman. Rizzo.
Yes.
Tomko.
Yes.
Yeager.
Yes.
Chair Tribolsi.
Yes. Members, by your vote, House Bill 1035 is reported favorably. Congratulations. Okay, next up, we have proposed committee substitute for House Bill 1 relating to education. Representative Tuck and Representative Valdez, you are recognized to explain the PCS for House Bill 1.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and good morning, members. I'll be very brief. As I recognize, this is the fourth committee stop on this bill, and it's received a constant evolution. At its very core, HB 1 will expand the eligibility for the FTC and the FESEO scholarship recipient to any student who is a Florida resident and is eligible to enroll in K through 12, while still prioritizing low and middle income families. This will allow parents to choose among a variety of education options to truly customize their child's education. In addition to the expanded eligibility, we will also increase the program capacity for the FESUA scholarship, which will have the effect of eliminating the wait list for this scholarship. Under this initiative, we will never have to tell a parent and a family no. HB 1 includes related provisions that provide for and clarify parent and student responsibilities, purchasing guidelines, allowable expenses, among others. Madam Chair, that is the bill, and with your permission, I'll have Representative Valdez come up to present the rest of the PCS.
Great. Thank you, Representative Tuck. Representative Valdez, you are recognized to present.
Well, good morning, Chair Trabolsi, Vice Chair Rizzo, and Ranking Member Benjamin, and to my partner here, Kaylee Tuck. Good morning. Members, the portion of the bill that I'm going to be talking about is about the deregulation of public schools. So I'm going to go through the bill by section so that maybe if you all would like to follow along, please do. In part of reducing the regulation of traditional public schools, if you look at Section 11, lines 2270 through 2282, it requires that the State Board of Education no later than November 1st of 2023 to recommend to the governor and legislator repeals and revisions to the Florida Early Learning through 20 Education Code to reduce regulation of public schools. It requires the State Board of Education to consider input from stakeholders such as teachers, superintendents, school boards, and others. In a choice portal, and if you look at Section 12, lines 2287 through 2299, it requires the Commissioner of Education to develop an online portal that enables parents to choose the best educational options for their student. This portal must recommend educational options based on questions about the student, advise parents on the recommended educational options for their student, and enable schools to develop a school profile and connect directly with families that express interest in the school and allow parents to complete the school enrollment process. Looking at the transfer of student records in Section 14 of the bill, line number 2321. It provides a district with additional flexibility for the transfer of student records from 3 school days to 5 school days. An online course requirement for high school diploma on Section 15, line 2330, it removes the requirement for at least one course within the 24 credits required for a standard high school diploma to be completed through online learning. Transportation. We all know that transportation has been a real concern in all of our districts, right? I don't believe that there's a district that says, we got transportation down pat. So on Section 16, line 2378, it authorizes a district school board to adopt a policy to transport students via vehicles other than buses and requires the Department of Education to assist the school districts in securing other vehicles for transporting students through pooling bids. Capital improvement funding flexibility. This really makes sense. Section 20, lines 2550 through 2551. It authorizes the school district with employees who support capital projects to fund and account for employees' salaries and benefits with capital funding. This increases transparency of capital project expenditures and improves accounting practices. One that's very dear and near to my heart is educator certification requirements. Section 21, lines 2630 through 2665, does the following. It removes barriers to teacher certification and provides additional time in which an individual has to obtain certification. The amendment does the following. It increases the length of a valid non-renewable temporary teaching certificate from 3 years to 5 years. It also authorizes a waiver for the requirements of mastery of the general knowledge test shall be waived for an individual who has been provided 3 years of support and instruction and who has been rated effective or highly affected each of those 3 years. For demonstrating mastery of a subject area, this amendment clarifies those requirements. They must achieve a passing score on the Florida Development Subject Area Exam or a standardized test that is directly related to the subject. I keep referring this as an amendment. It's no longer an amendment. It's part of the PCS. So pardon my, I just caught that on. But anyways, for a subject that requires a bachelor's degree, it allows for a master's degree or higher to satisfy the subject area knowledge mastery. This PCS allows documentation of 3 years of effective or highly effective teaching to be used to demonstrate Master of Professional Preparation and Education competence. The cost per student station flexibility is in Section 22, line 2378. And this provides that unfinished construction projects for new construction started on or before July 1st of 2026 is exempt from the total cost per student station requirements under the law. And that's the PCS. And Madam Chair, I have an amendment to the PCS.
Thank you, Representative Valdez. We are going to take questions on the bill before hearing the amendment. Members, do you have any questions on the bill for Representative Valdez or Chair Tuck? Representative Gant, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning, Representatives.
Good morning.
This question is specifically for Representative Valdez on the last part you just talked about. Well, the second to last part, lines 26, 30 through 45 or 42 regarding the increasing from 3 to 5 years. What's the benefit from increasing from 3 to 5 years?
The benefit will be, thank you for the question, Representative Gant, and through the chair.
You're recognized.
Thank you. The benefit for this is because we'll be retaining teachers. Oftentimes it takes a little bit, you know, think about our kids taking tests, right? Sometimes you don't get it within the first 3 years and you have all those attempts. Well, this will allow for those fabulous teachers that are teaching before our students to be able to be retained in the classroom. Thank you so much for the question.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Gant, do you have any other questions? Representative Costello?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Valdez, on Section 16, you mentioned how well that the school boards and school districts love their buses and transportation. Here you say authorizing a district school board to use other vehicles. Can you define other vehicles and what kind of cost could be occurred by using other vehicles?
You're recognized.
Thank you for the question, Rep. Costello. There's a shortage of school bus drivers everywhere. And there are, there's a budget line item that takes care of transportation. And what this will do is it will allow for there are some companies that have been vetted through the Department of Education to provide these services. So they would, the department will assist the school districts in finding a vendor or a partner, if you will, that has been vetted and is able to transport children in the areas of need.
Do you have a follow-up? Yes.
Thank you for that answer. Could you give me a couple examples of these vendors?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Rep. Costello, for the question. I really do not have any examples of a vendor that has been vetted. I did not do that homework, but I can find out for you and get back with you.
Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you. Any other questions on the bill? Okay, seeing no further questions, we do have two amendments on the PCS for House Bill 1. Representative Valdez, we're going to take up Chair Tuck's amendment first.
Sure.
Representative Tuck, you are recognized to explain Amendment 1.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. This is just a technical amendment regarding parent reimbursement.
Great. Members, are there any questions on the amendment? On the amendment. Are there any appearance cards on the amendment? Seeing no appearance cards, is there debate on the amendment? Seeing no debate, Representative Tuck, you're recognized to close on your amendment.
Waive close, Madam Chair.
Members, if you favor the adoption of the amendment, signify by saying yay.
Yay.
Opposed, no. By your vote, the amendment is adopted. And Representative Valdez, you are recognized to present your amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you so very much. Members, this amendment will remove lines 2561 through 2665 and will insert a language that will allow an individual who has successfully completed the professional preparation courses and a professional preparation and education competence program to demonstrate mastery of professional preparation by documenting 3 years of effective or highly effective teaching, as well as providing an effective date upon becoming law for only the changes in the bill on Florida's educator certification requirements, meaning that the effective date change allows individuals with a certificate that is expiring on or before July 1st of this year to be able to utilize the changes in this bill, specifically the extension of the duration of a non-renewable temporary certificate from 3 to 5 years under the bill. And that's the amendment.
Thank you, Representative. Are there any questions on the amendment? Seeing no questions and no appearance cards, is there debate on the amendment? Seeing no debate, Representative Valdez, you are recognized to close on your amendment.
Thank you very much, Chair Trabolsi, and I waive close.
Members, if you favor the adoption of the amendment, signify by saying yay.
Yay.
Opposed, no. By your vote, your amendment is adopted, and we are back on the bill as amended. Members, we are now moving to public testimony on the bill, and we do have appearance cards. Barney Bishop, Barney Bishop Consulting.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I am the chairman of the board of Tallahassee Classical School. We are a public charter school. Our curriculum is from Hillsdale College. And I've learned a lot being on the board for the last 2+ years about operations of new charter schools, because we're only 2.5 years old. We have about over 500 students, and this is a wonderful bill. Thank you, Representative Tuck and Representative Valdez, for helping to make this bill even better. I wanted to cover a couple of areas. Our parents, there are more children at our school that have disabilities and that need extra help than probably you can imagine. 37% of our students are Title I, and over 20% of them are ESE. Now, these are parents that have taken their children out of a public school and have come to our school because they want their children to be taught in a classical Western civilization education. But the children that have issues that are disabled, they have a lot of issues, and that this increased funding through these scholarships is going to be absolutely critical. Two of the things I wanted to quickly chat about. One is school transportation. There was a question about what other companies are vetted. There are private transportation companies that already can provide. For our school, it is in our 10th grade, we only have 10 students. It's extremely expensive for us to get a school bus to take just 10 students over to the mag lab. So if we would have alternative transportation, frankly, if we could even take parents' cars or a van that was certified, then that would be very helpful for us and decrease the cost tremendously. Last thing is teacher certification. Many of our teachers are certified. Many of them are certified in one area but are in teaching in another area. So the idea that we're giving teachers more latitude, time to get their certification is very important. It is very needed. These are very good teachers, and we do want to retain them. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Barney. It's always great to see you. Thanks for joining us here today. Next up, we have Sharon Kerwin. Ms. Kerwin, you're recognized.
Okay, thank you so much. Good morning, Chair Trabolsi and members of the committee. My name is Sharon Kerwin, and I want to thank you for supporting HB 1, which will provide all children with the opportunity to succeed and will give parents the power to choose the best educational option for their child. I am a mom of four and a parent that has utilized school choice for my daughter, Grace. When Grace was 9 years old, she was diagnosed with a rare disease called juvenile dermatomyositis, also known as JDM. Throughout Grace's K-12 journey, our family utilized a variety of school choice options, including hospital homebound schooling, traditional brick and mortar, and virtual education. Grace is now a thriving freshman at Lee University. Without flexible educational options, this would not have been possible. HB 1 solidifies Florida's position as the school choice state. This legislation builds upon that success and will give all families the ability to choose the educational option that best fits their children's needs. Thank you for your support.
Thank you for being with us today. Ryan Kennedy. You're recognized, Mr. Kennedy.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, all the committee members. My name is Ryan Kennedy, and I'm with the Florida Citizens Alliance, a group of 250,000 supporters of K-12 education initiatives and really trying to transform education in Florida. I'm here because we have always been a big proponent of the money following the child, and we are so proud that this is one step closer to happening in Florida. So I want to thank the representative, Chair Tuck, and for bringing this bill forward and doing that. There are a couple things, though, that I would like to bring up. When it comes to testing, we would just love to see an amendment that would allow the testing requirements as far as homeschoolers and the PEP students to mimic the current setup for homeschoolers under 1002.41. And also, when it comes to religious freedom, we would like for there to be a stronger wording for the protection of religious freedom and religious curriculum for PEP students and private schools, just so that it's clear and concise that these sorts of curriculums are protected. Thank you.
Thank you for being here. Next up is Marie Claire Lehman from Fund Education Now and Guardians for Public Schools. Following Ms. Lehman will be Melinda Starwood. You're recognized, Ms.
Hi,
Lehman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So Fund Education Now and Guardians for Public Schools has had a chance in other committees to stand in opposition of HB 1 and to express our concerns about it. I really just want to focus on two additional things here today. First of all, the promise of deregulation feels a little bit insincere given the number of bills this session that are going to continue to overregulate our public schools when it comes to start times and access to cell phones, apps that teachers can use, and on, restrictions and that remove local control. And so that combination is a little bit difficult to swallow, I guess. And then the second thing, more specific to the language that we're including here today in HB 1, and I'd love to be able to speak to Representative Valdez afterwards, but with the portal, we're very concerned about the online portal, given that the FLDOE doesn't have any oversight over the private schools, and they don't use the same curriculum. Many of them are low quality. Many of them are able to discriminate. They don't have to assess the students the same way. They don't do the progress monitoring 1, 2, 3. And then reporting those scores is not apples to apples. And so when parents are using this portal, it's going to be very difficult for them to be able to compare schools because it's not, unless the private schools start to take the same assessments and are reported through a school grade mechanisms like our public schools, then we're not actually giving good information to parents to be able to make good choices. So, and I'd love to be able to speak to you more about that. Thank you. I appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Melinda Stanwood, wishing to speak in person. You're recognized, Ms. Stanwood. Did I say that correctly?
Yes, ma'am. Thank you. Thank you for having me. I am a proponent of school choice, and I'm also strongly against this bill. I'm a mother of 6 children, and at least 5 of my children have at some point been homeschooled, including my high school senior who's been homeschooled all 13 years. I taught at a private school here in Tallahassee for 4 years, and 3 of my children still attend this private school. So again, I take advantage of school choice. However, there's a false presumption that private schools are inherently better. We had the ability at my private school to turn down students, as Marie Claire has already noted. We could discriminate against students, and I say this as a teacher. We already have plenty of options available for homeschoolers and for private schoolers in terms of vouchers, but I want to remind everyone that there is virtually no regulation for private schools and or for homeschooling. Private schools can teach virtually whatever they want. If they wanted to teach that the earth is flat, they could. As a homeschool mom, I could have my kids play video games all day long if I wanted. I didn't choose to do that, but I could. Yet we are asking more and more of our teachers and our students in public schools year after year. Teachers don't just want more money. They want and deserve more trust and respect. There is a teacher shortage for a good reason. Please allow families to continue to make these choices as my family has, but please do not bankrupt our public education system. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up, Scott Mazur. Next up will be Darla Wolak, and you're recognized, Mr. Mazur.
Thank you, Madam Chair, representatives. My name is Scott Mazur. I'm a husband, father of three, professional educator, and taxpayer. And I think that's the part that kind of concerns me most about this particular bill and its transparency. So anything universal must be truly universal. So if we're going to ask one group to, you know, to one standard, we have to keep everyone accountable to the same standard. So if you take a look at the regs book for charter schools and for private schools, it's probably about an eighth of an inch. But if you look at the regs for public schools, it's about 3 inches thick. So it's about 24 more times the amount of regulations on our public schools. So I ask you to vote no on this bill until there's at least some equal, universal transparency. Thank you.
Thank you for being here. Darla Wolak. Next up will be Denise Howard. You're recognized, Ms. Wolak.
Thank you, Madam Chair and House of Representatives that are here. If you truly want to provide parents meaningful choices, all schools should be held accountable for sharing important information with parents and the general public. What do the graduation rates look like? What career, technical, and advanced courses are offered? What services are provided for students with disabilities? Are the teachers certified to teach the areas that they're actually teaching? Public schools are required to provide this information to the public, but private schools are not. The lack of transparency makes it difficult for parents to make the good choices and the best choices for their children and for the public to see where their tax dollars are going. Parents and the public deserve to know about the schools that they are funding. Increasing public funding for private schools and homeschooling programs should equate with increased transparency. I urge you to vote no on this bill. Thank you.
Thank you for being here today. Denise Howard with Guardians for Public Schools in Leon County. Next up will be Noren Dollard. You're recognized.
Good morning. I am a mother of three children attending public schools here in Tallahassee, and I have two concerns with this bill I'd like to mention. First, this committee substitute includes deregulations that those of us who choose public schools have not asked for. Parents do want their children taught by certified teachers. In many other bills this session, you are adding unnecessary regulations and mandates, and yet here you claim to be leveling the playing field to help public schools be more competitive. What you are actually doing here is lowering the standards. And these efforts to deregulate our public schools will do nothing to increase the accountability of private options. Currently, 61% of students using vouchers in schools that are not accountable to anyone return to public school after 2 years having suffered learning loss. The public school must then provide additional resources to meet the needs of those students. We don't see this taken account at all in this bill's fiscal impact analysis. If you're serious about parity, remove unnecessary and unfunded mandates from the public schools and ensure that the ESAs this bill creates can only be spent on vetted and academically sound programs. Thanks.
Thank you for being here. Noren Dollard with Florida Policy Institute. You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning. I'm Noren Dollard. I'm a senior policy analyst at Florida Policy Institute. I come to oppose HB 1. We support public schools as you do. Personally, I have a son who had superior experience in public schools. He entered college as a second semester sophomore because of his public education. I want that possibility for all of Florida's children, whoever they are, wherever they live. That cannot happen if $4 billion, our estimate for 23-24, is taken from the state's share of public K-12 funding and sent to private schools. Already this year, $1.4 billion has been diverted from the Florida Education Finance Program, those are public dollars, and sent to private schools. HB1 can only cost more than that because of the new students that will be added to the responsibility of districts without an additional revenue source. HB1 is not fiscally responsible. If we look to Idaho, last week their legislature voted down a universal voucher bill because of its significant cost, as well as the lack of accountability and transparency. Ohio estimated with their legislative budget commission that vouchers will cost them $1.1 billion, and they only have 2/3 of the children that we have in Florida. Look also to Arizona, who estimated $30 million and is now in the red for $300 million. And our conservative estimate of these costs speak to finding revenue sources and identifying those revenue sources so that we can keep improving teacher pay as we have and provide the resources to our public schools to make them competitive. We need to hold the public school budgets harmless from the impact of this bill. There are options. We could consider leaving the income limits as they are, as outlined by the governor in his conforming bill. We could establish a separate line item for the FES, as the Gardner scholarships used to, or leverage the Florida tax credits more scholarships more fully. Last year, there was over $250 million of these scholarships that went unused. For Florida's public schools to be competitive and continue their high-quality program offerings, we must fund them adequately and protect the state public education funding, FEFP, from draconian cuts caused by this bill. Thank you.
Madam Chair, do you mind if I ask a question or two? Do we have time for that?
You're recognized.
Thank you. I like numbers. I used to have Chair Tomko's job in the K-12 education budget, and you've put out a pretty, you know, big number there.
$4 billion,
I guess, diverted from government schools. Does that number include people who are currently getting?
Yes, it does, and that is okay. One difference from the House's estimate.
Okay, so isn't it intellectually bankrupt to put a fiscal analysis where you include costs that the bill does not change, given that even if this bill were not to pass, a portion, we can argue about how much, of that $4 billion that you claim this bill would cost would be accounted for anyway?
You're recognized, Ms. Dahl.
Oh, thank you, Chair. I would argue the opposite. A cost is a cost. Yes, we have this cost now. We will have this cost in the future.
Okay. One last follow-up, maybe?
Absolutely.
So it's not correct, then, just to be clear, that the fiscal impact, even by your own methodology, of this bill is not $4 billion.
You're recognized.
Thank you, ma'am. If you are asking what is the difference in the impact of this bill alone, yes, I see what you're saying.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Next, we have Sierra Register. Rester. Sierra Rester. Okay. We're going to move on to waive in support or opposition. And we have Pamela Fort, waives in opposition. Valorio Yensbell, waves in opposition. Kathy Boeing, waves in opposition. Jackson Oberlink from Florida Rising, waves in opposition. Zayala Bryant from a legislative intern, waves in opposition. Trish Neely, League of Women Voters Florida, waves in opposition. And Kara Gross, American Civil Liberties Union of Florida, waves in opposition.
I'm sorry, I'm not going to pronounce this right. Gary Malik, Dream Defenders, Raves in opposition. Waiving in support of House Bill 1, Amanda Prater, Opportunity Solutions Project. Aaron DiPietro, Florida Family Policy Council, waiving in support. Michael Barrett, Florida Conference of Catholic Bishops, waives in support. Alex Kearse, Deputy Legislator Director of the Foundation for Florida's Future, waives in support. Sarah Massey, Florida Chamber of Commerce, waives in support. Christopher Stanberg, Americans for Prosperity, waives in support. Deborah Mortham, the Optima Foundation, waives in support. Alexis LaRose, Step Up for Students, waives in support. Ethan Merchant, National Coalition for Public School Options, Florida Chapter, waives in support. Is there anyone wishing to debate on the bill? Members, any debate? Representative Gant.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I understand the intent of this bill, but 85% of parents choose to send their children to public schools. And we need to respect parents' choices when it is a choice to go to public schools. And this bill would essentially put at risk that choice. We understand that education is a great equalizer. And for those parents who are making the choice to allow their children to go to public schools, we have to ensure that their students get a quality education, and that doesn't take away from parents who choose to homeschool, who choose to send their children to charter schools, or who chooses to send their children to private school. But what this bill would do is jeopardize the ability for public schools to continue to be funded. And while our goal is to progress Florida and education in Florida, this bill doesn't meet the mark as it is yet. Because what if we're wrong in this bill? Where's the safety net? Where is the money put aside to course reverse if we need to? I don't see that in this version of the bill. So I think we need to include parents' choice, or include in the phrase parents' choice, parents who choose to send their children to public schools. Thank you.
Representative Benjamin in debate. No? Representative Casello, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's more of a statement than a debate. I'm for vouchers. I really do. But we've lost sight of the meaning of what we were trying to accomplish when this program started. We've taken all restrictions, all the bumper guards off vouchers. Heck, you know, people who are sending their children to private schools now, the elite, I would say. Heck, Tiger Woods kids could qualify for vouchers. Does this make sense? It doesn't. We're losing sight what the voucher program was, for the disadvantage, to give them an equal opportunity in education. This has taken all the guidelines off that. It really, and I'm not talking the money, that the money is, we can debate the $4 billion or $2.5 billion, whatever that number is. It's not about the money, it's the principle behind this, what the voucher program was supposed to be intended for. I think we've lost sight of that. Universal, not playing by the same standards. A gentleman went up there and said that the restrictions on public schools, the restriction book is 3 inches thick versus the private schools. So if we're going to do this, let's have the same criteria, the same playing, the same rules. We're not playing by the same rules. But yet, universal, I love that word, universal. It's a great word. And if we're going to use that word, let's make it truly universal on the same playing field. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Rizzo in debate.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you very much to the sponsors. Thank you for everyone that came and spoke and has spoken at every stop on this bill. First and foremost, Representative Tuck, you have been stellar in how you have managed this bill, how you have listened to concerns, how you have amended this bill, how you have taken the time to speak with representatives who speak for almost 200,000 constituents, and been so amenable to everything that they have voiced as being concerns. It truly is just you've done quite a laudable job at every single stop throughout this process. Rep. Valdez, thank you for bringing your experience, your decades-long experience in the realm of public education. And we've had very passionate debates over choice, over funding, over public schools versus private schools, and, of course, charter schools. There's a lot of passion around this entire debate of HB1. And there's a lot of misinformation, unfortunately. And being an educator, I like to speak information. Charter schools have the same regulations as every other public school in the state of Florida, every single one. So first and foremost, let's start that way. There's one difference. Number one, they are funded a little bit differently because there is a different district cost that goes to the district and not the charter school. So they're funded a little bit less than district schools. And there's just one other major choice, which is or difference, which is their boards. As far as choice, number one, we are not going to fundamentally defund public education. This body, for years and years and years, has constantly increased funding of public schools. Constantly. In fact, right now, being discussed in this legislative session, is a substantial increase and change, fundamental change, in the way that we fund public schools and districts. And the district that I come from, that Representative Garcia also was from, and Representative Benjamin is from, is the largest school district in the state and the third largest in the nation. And again, I believe we'll be the recipient or beneficiary of this change in the way that we possibly could change education or educational funding. The nimbleness, and I use that word and I chose that word specifically, the nimbleness of what is in this bill for districts to be allowed to use as far as teacher certification, items that are very expensive, and also quite difficult to manage at times logistically, like transportation. Okay? The nimbleness with which this particular bill allows districts the ability to move around in these difficult situations. Anyone that looks at this and says this is not pro-teacher and pro-district is totally wrong. Because it is. It allows for choice for districts to be able to do what they need to do and manage and deregulate to manage what they find as difficult situations. And lastly, 75%, give or take, 75% of people that have choice options choose traditional or government-run public schools. Choice has allowed for public education to elevate their game. Anyone that has ever worked in a school system will know that. And parents choose. And if you're given the opportunity to choose what you wish, what is best for your family, for your child, you will do so. And overwhelmingly, we have seen over and over and over again that our school districts, they have upped their games. Now, it may not be for every single parent. It may not be for every single student. And that is why we have choice in Florida. That is why we lead the nation in our choice programs. And so I am very gratified that we are hearing this bill, that we are doing this. And I think that everyone's concerns will be assuaged as it keeps moving along, and choice will continue just to elevate our educational game here in the state of Florida. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Beltran, you're recognized.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair, and thank you, everyone, for the bill and the robust debate we've had this morning. School choice was part of the platform I ran on. I was elected on that basis, and I'm obligated to vote for this. I want to make a couple of remarks about why and one suggestion for the bill moving forward. One of my colleagues said that, you know, Tiger Woods kids are going to be eligible for this program. I guess he's right. I guess that's, you know, it's a punchy talking point. I understand why he said that. He's got a point. But Tiger Woods kids are eligible for public schools right now. Like, everyone's allowed to go to public schools. Everyone's allowed to participate in the choice programs, to go to charter schools, do whatever they want right now. More importantly, Tiger Woods is paying a ton of taxes, I guarantee you. I hope he is, unless he's cheating on his taxes. But he's paying a ton of taxes, far in excess of whatever benefits his kids are going to get from the government. So it doesn't really bother me that folks who are maybe not indigent are going to be participating in these programs, because folks who are not indigent participate in a variety of government programs, including and especially the public schools. You know, maybe you're not indigent, maybe you're not Tiger Woods, maybe you're just kind of a middle class, maybe you're doing okay, you're affluent, maybe you use that term to describe somebody, but still, if you decide to put your kid in private school or to homeschool, you're leaving a lot of money on the table. You're going and buying books out of your pocket, or you're paying for an expensive tuition, and you're completely leaving, under current law, you're completely leaving that money, that your tax dollars that have gone to the public schools, and the dollars are not following your kid unless you're in one of the limited programs we have now. That's the case for my kids. I mean, we buy books out of our pocket because we choose to homeschool so that I can do this, and frankly, so that my wife can regulate, make sure my kids are getting a wholesome environment and education. So I've heard some comments about accountability for these programs. This is a government program. I'm under no illusion that there's not going to be some waste, fraud, and abuse. It's a government program. It's government. I'm for limited government. I don't trust the government. I'm under no illusion that there's going to be waste, fraud, and abuse in this program. But there's waste, fraud, and abuse in every program. There's waste, fraud, and abuse in our public school system right now. Okay? And there are bad things that happen in the schools. There are unwholesome things that happen in the schools. There's maybe problems with this program, but that's not unique to this program. That's not a reason not to do this program, because we believe in school choice in the marketplace. And if there's problems in these programs, then people can go back to the public schools. And if there's rampant fraud, then obviously we're going to crack down on that. There's QI-TAMs, there's enforcement mechanisms, there's criminal penalties, there's all kinds of things that you have to sign under penalty of perjury. And so there will be enforcement. I hope there's enforcement to make sure that this this program is administered in a responsible way. And if there's not, we're obviously going to be back, or somebody's going to be back, maybe after my time, but somebody's going to be back to make sure that we address that. The one suggestion I want to make is on the homeschool portion. It's phased in over a number of years, and it's initially limited, I believe, to 20,000 students. I guess there are two things that struck me. One is, you know, we're not phasing in other aspects of the program. I think we should, you know, implement everything. The second thing, frankly, is to homeschool, you don't incur all of the costs. You don't have the plant, for example. You don't really have the labor costs. You have materials and curriculum and things like that. I'm not sure that, frankly, that homeschool kids need the full voucher amount or the full amount that you may need in other more of a brick-and-mortar thing. But obviously, I see that there's a fiscal constraint there because it's being phased in over a number of years. If we're going to go up to the full amount, that's fine. It's good for my family, but it should be phased in by amount. Maybe it should be, you know, if it's 20,000 and that's you know, 20% of the anticipated number of kids who are going to be using that, then it should start out at 20% of the full funding and go up. It should be phased in by amount of dollars per student rather than number of students in the program. So that's kind of my one suggestion for the bill. Otherwise, thank you. Thank you all for your work.
Thank you, Representative Beltran. Representative Alvarez, you're recognized in debate.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Chair Tuck, and Representative Valdez. I appreciate you being there. You know, when we were freshmen, we were taught just to do a lot more listening than talking, but I'm really just tired of what I'm listening to be honest with you. It's as if the sky is falling and we're not going to, you know, we're going to let Florida just collapse because we're offering someone an option. What you're offering, right, is thinking outside of the box to fix a problem that we've had constantly and a problem that we continue to say, oh, our schools are failing. We're not doing something. Well, we've given everyone the chance, right? And what we're saying is we're giving people an option. Doing the same thing over and over, we know that's crazy, right? So here's what we're doing. You got public schools, you got private schools, you got charter schools, you got virtual schools. But they tell me, everyone's telling me that we're about to collapse our education system. As it stands today, DOE tells me 70% of Florida's kids are eligible for scholarships, but only 8% take advantage of it. And I didn't see the public school system collapse. You know what I did see? Public school systems stand up and start paying attention. Oh, no. Someone is actually holding me accountable. Oh, goodness. Someone is actually making me do what I've been chartered and paid to do. And I, quite frankly, I'm tired of it. And if you're asking me where I stand, I stand with that little kid that came in front of us and said, because I had a choice, I got out of poverty. And, you know, you're looking at one. Right? Everyone tells their story. I don't need the attention. I didn't come here for that. But you're looking at a guy whose mom did the same exact thing when the public school he was sent to wasn't very good. So I was fortunate to not be trapped. Why should anyone else be trapped? Like, we came here looking for the opportunity. And when we give one more option for opportunity, you tell me, respect choice, but only if it's public school. And then we say, oh, if you're rich, which you shouldn't pay taxes, apparently, and you shouldn't have access to public school, or only public school, but not private, not charter, not virtual. What are we talking about? What we're talking about here is the option to educate your child in the state of Florida, and it's leadership. We're thinking outside the box. Clearly, I hope you know where I stand. I applaud you for taking this on, Chair Tuck, and I'm very proud to have my support behind this.
Thank you, Representative Alvarez. Ranking Member Benjamin, you're recognized for debate.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is my second term, so I've had now three sessions to look at what this state of Florida does with regards to school choice. As a parent, I understand the necessity of school choice. And what I've heard is that most people don't have an issue with choice. What people do have an issue is playing on an even playing field. We often talk about school choice and public schools standing up to their charters and doing what they're supposed to be doing. And so we set standards for those schools to do that. And we ask that they adhere to the standards in which we set. And then we offer other choices and say to those other choices, you don't have to worry about those standards. You just do it however you want, and here's some money to do whatever you want to do, however you want to do it. I've heard that folks just want to know, how do you compare to my other options? But we don't seem to want to be able to even give them that transparency of how they compare to other options that we may have in the marketplace. We're not comparing apples to apples and oranges to oranges in this competition, if this is about competition and providing the best possible choices to the students of the state of Florida. We are chartered with a constitution that says that we're supposed to give a high quality education provided by the public schools. So yes, we ferret out options because not every student learns the same. Not every parents have the same needs.
But what we're asking and what opponents are asking is for an actual playing field, for actual transparency. That's it. And until we get there, until we get to an actual even playing field, while I believe in choice, I myself, I'm a kid that came from poverty. My parent only could choose public schools. And yet I sit here still today. We must compete on an even playing field. And so I will continue to be no until we get there. But you did a hell of a job.
Thank you, Ranking Member Benjamin. Representative Fine, you're recognized in debate.
Thank you. I actually want to start with what the Florida Constitution says that we have to provide for our children, just so we level set. The education of children is a fundamental value of the people of the state of Florida. Don't think any of us disagree with that. It's therefore a paramount duty of the state to make adequate provision for the education of all children residing within its borders. It goes on. It talks about things that we can agree or disagree about, but that is the fundamental value. Are we educating the children? The job of public education is to educate the public. It is not about a vehicle in which to do that. And so I always like to tell two stories. I'm going to do that now. The story of a family that had a 13-year-old boy. That 13-year-old boy was heavily mistreated in the school that he went to. I told the story for the first time a couple of days ago. I don't know that I told it before, but the one of the low points is when the student, who was actually pretty good at math, failed seventh grade algebra because he missed a test on Yom Kippur. Teacher told his parents that if Yom Kippur was a real holiday, the school would have the day off. That family had no other options. They didn't have a lot of money. Fortunately, the kid was smart enough. Even with the zero on that test, he was able to get an A, and that kid was me. My parents had no choice. I was stuck in that school where a teacher literally failed me because, or attempted to fail me because of my religion. A few years later, a couple decades later, a six-year-old child was told that he wasn't going to be able to do math because he didn't do math the way the school wanted it done. He was pretty good at math, just like his dad. He could figure out in his head how you added numbers, far beyond what a six-year-old should be able to do. But the school told him if he didn't learn to do math their way, he wouldn't be successful in their school. Well, that boy's parents had a lot of money. And so within a week, he was out of that school, and he went to a private school. And by the way, he went to a private school with a lot of people who weren't wealthy, who were already benefiting from those vouchers. Many, many children in that school came from middle class or lower income people who had the opportunity that these programs availed themselves for today. So that's the story of me, and that's the story of my children. And by the way, in our family, we avail ourselves of all the school choice. I have one child who goes to a private school, and I pay for it. I have one child who goes to a government school. By the way, we chose to take him out of the private school to send him to the government school. And when that government school didn't meet all of his needs, he takes about half of his classes from the government virtual school. So I believe that oftentimes the government option may be the best option. But the key is to make sure children have the choice that is best for them, as best for their parents. I want to correct a couple of things that are said that are just flat out wrong. We have funded government schools at record levels every year I have been in the legislature. I was the chairman of that committee for the past 2 years. Chair Tomko down there is the chair of it now. I suspect she will do the same this year. Government schools have gotten record funding. They are not being hurt as a result of people going and making different choices. And someone said, what happens if we make a mistake? You know what happens? We make mistakes all the time in predicting how many students are going to go to schools. It was crazy with COVID because all these kids like disappeared all of a sudden and then they came back. Make mistakes all the time. The legislature automatically goes and fixes the workload. We have a workload adjustment. Workload is the term for how many children are going to go to public schools. So we fix that. And it's not big and controversial, and we don't say, oops, there's not enough money. You can't go to a government school this month. But you know what we do today? You're a kid with special needs. You want to get a voucher or an ESA. And we we run out of money? Oops. Sorry. So the folks who want to pull this out of the FEFP, that's the system that they want to continue. When we have issues in government schools, we fix them. When we have issues in vouchers and school choice, we go, sorry, too bad, you will wait. There was a question here about you know what, this is all fine, choice is fine, let's just all have the same standards. And I agree, I'd run that bill. There are schools around the state that do a terrible job. Not all of them. Obviously, I send my son to a government school, so some of them are great, and the school he goes to is fantastic. But there are some that aren't good, and they fail year after year after year after year after year. And you know what happens to those schools? They may have to do some programs here and some programs there and that sort of thing, but in general, they never close. Never. They continue to plug right along. Now, if I wasn't happy with how my child's private school was going, and the other parents weren't happy with how their children's private school is going, they could pull their kids right out of that private school. And you know what would happen to that school? It would close. So I suspect the private schools of this state would say, if we're guaranteed to remain open to the level that the government-run schools can remain open, sure, bring it on. But they have far higher accountability. Because when I took my child out of the government school when he was 6 years old, the principal said he didn't care because the school would be able to keep the money anyway. Now, he ain't the principal anymore, and I may have had something to do with that. But that's not the case in private schools. Private schools are far more accountable than government-run schools because they are accountable to parents. And I do not believe that parents are going to allow their children to go year after year after year to a bad school when they have chosen to take that child out of their neighborhood government school to put them there. If the neighborhood government school is better, that's where they're going to go back and go. This is a good idea. And the reason it is a good idea is the greatest thing we can do as a government, the greatest thing that we can do as a society is to educate our children. Education is a miracle because there's nothing that we can do. There's no investment that we can make that will have a more profound impact on children. You can hear the stories of me and my colleagues. Yes, we had great parents. Yes, we had great opportunities, but it was what we got learning in school. It was what we got learning from our teachers in education. I am who I am. I had great parents, but I am who I am because of the education I had, both public in the government school I went to and private in the universities I went to later. Education is what made me what I am. Without it, I wouldn't have gotten where I am, and many of you wouldn't do the same. This bill delivers on a promise that many of us have made for a long time, that every student should get every dollar for every choice that they and their parents think best for their child. We don't care about systems. We don't care about bureaucracies. That's not our goal here. Our goal is to focus on ensuring that that miracle of education, that promise of that miracle, can be delivered to every single child in the state of Florida. So 13-year-old boys like me have those choices, and so that every parent has the same choices that I had for my children. Your bill does that. I appreciate your courage and your conviction to bring it forward, and I can't wait to vote for this bill on the floor.
Representative Tuck, you are recognized to close on your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And there's been a lot of testimony today, so there's nothing that I can really say on why this is a good bill that hasn't been said more eloquently by others. So I want to speak to the process that this bill has gone through. If this bill is fortunate enough to be passed out of this committee favorably, we will have CS for CS for CS for CS for HB1. Each CS represents substantial amendments at each committee stop. Even today, we had a PCS that still had two amendments. When you look at the blood, sweat, and tears, the weeks, months that has been put into this bill by stakeholders, families, staff, especially staff, we went from a good bill to a phenomenal bill. And I just hope everybody recognizes that. I'll leave you with this. Our system today is formulaic. Our eligibility today is formulaic. Families are not formulaic. Kids are not formulaic. We can no longer be formulaic. And with that, I close. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Having closed on the bill, Kendall, please call the roll.
Representatives Alvarez.
Yay.
Baker.
Yes.
Beltran.
Yes.
Benjamin.
A hopeful no.
Burfield.
Yes.
Kennedy. Casello.
Respectfully, no.
Daniels.
Yes.
Fine.
Yes.
Franklin.
Yes.
Gant.
No.
Garcia.
Yes.
Gonzalez Pittman.
Yes.
Rizzo.
Yes.
Tomko.
Yes.
Yeager.
Yes.
Chair Trabolsi.
Yes. Members, by your vote, we will now see HB 1 move to the floor. Congratulations. Members, at this time, we are going to TP House Bill 1069, and I am going to turn the gavel over to Vice Chair Rizzo while we take a little bit of a seventh inning stretch.
At all, do we? Mm-hmm. Beautiful. Let me turn this off. Thank you. All right. I believe our seventh inning stretch has come to an end. And so if all members will please come back and take your seats. We will now hear proposed committee bill EQS 23-01 by Chair Trabolsi relating to student outcomes. Chair Trabolsi, you are recognized to explain the PCB on student outcomes.
Thank you, Vice Chair Rizzo. And Ranking Member Benjamin. Members, during the last few weeks, we have listened to presentations on Florida's student outcomes, and I believe that we all share an overwhelming urgency to address the opportunities that will enable students to perform on grade level in both reading and mathematics. As you may recall, the data shows that approximately half of all of our students are performing on grade level in ELA and mathematics. NAEP results rank Florida 21st in grade 8 reading student performance and 32nd in grade 8 mathematics student performance. The long-term success of our students depends on mastery of those foundational literacy, reading, and mathematics skills in early grades. This PCB focuses on teaching those essential tenets of education, promotes phonics and the science of reading, eliminates the use of 3Qing, includes charter schools, teacher preparation programs, and creates a framework for increasing mathematics proficiency in our state, something we've never done before. More specifically, this bill requires that reading instructional strategies throughout the entire education system, from teacher preparation programs and professional learning systems to classroom instruction and instructional materials, are grounded in the science of reading, include phonics, and do not use the three cueing model for teaching reading. The bill provides teachers, administrators, and parents with resources focused on the science of reading. By requiring Just Read Florida office in collaboration with the UF Lassinger Center to develop and provide access to an online repository of digital resources for teachers, children, and parents. The bill requires that courses in emergent literacy skills for instructors as well as curriculum for pre-kindergarten students include foundational background knowledge designed to correlate with the content that students will encounter in grades K through 12. As it relates to mathematics, the statewide coordinated screening and progress monitoring system to identify students who have substantial deficiency in reading and mathematics and those with characteristics of dyslexia, dyscalculia, and other learning disorders. Immediate intervention for students in grades K-3 exhibiting characteristics of dyslexia and students in grades K-4 exhibiting a substantial deficiency in mathematics or characteristics of dyscalculia. Immediate parental notification of their child's reading or mathematics deficiency and consultation in the development of a plan to accelerate the student's skill development. An individualized progress monitoring plan for such students that clearly outlines the student's specific deficiency, specific measures that will be used to evaluate and monitor the student's progress, and strategies, resources, and materials that will be provided to the student's parents to support the student's progress. School districts to evaluate students at the end of every grading period to determine if the student exhibits a reading or mathematics deficiency and requires a school to provide immediate support. We're not going to wait. Intensive interventions to continue until the student demonstrates grade level proficiency. The Department of Education to identify state approved comprehensive reading and mathematics intervention programs. Provides that VPK students who exhibit a substantial deficiency in early math skills must be referred to local school districts and may be eligible to receive intensive interventions before participating in kindergarten. Requires by December 1st recommendations for preparing teacher candidates and identifying mathematics training and professional learning opportunities for teachers in grades K through 4. Additionally, the bill requires school district reading plans to describe how the district prioritizes the assessment of highly effective teachers to kindergarten through grade 2 classrooms, as well as how reading coaches are assigned to individual schools, and requires the Department of Education review and approve these provisions. Finally, the bill requires the State Board of Education to define and rule the course standards for credit retrieval courses offered by school districts. And that is our bill.
Thank you, Chair Trabolsi. Members, are there any questions on the bill? Seeing some questions. Ranking Member Benjamin, you are recognized, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair. And thank you, Chair, for the bill. Will there be funding to aid districts in replacing curriculum materials?
Chair, you're recognized.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative. Yes, there will be funding. We are still negotiating and working out the fiscal aspects of this bill with Chair Tomko, and we will be presenting that at the next committee stop.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. And now we recognize Representative Franklin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Also, great, great bill. I was really asking the same question as Rep. Benjamin, wanted to ensure that we can work together, that the funding works really well to support this program within the public school system. That is not a question. I'm just, yeah, thanks.
That was question 1.2.
Chair, I like those questions. Really.
And now we will recognize Representative Gant.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair, and thank you, Madam Chair, for this bill. My only question is whether there will be any penalty with delayed implementation of the new materials. I know that's a lot of the districts have the three queuing materials that they've already approved, and they stagger implementation of new materials as the years come come by. So will there be any penalties, or will there be like a grace period to switch from three queuing to the science of reading for school districts that already approved three queuing materials?
And Chair, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. And thank you for that question. At this time, there's no penalty. However, we do have dates that we have set in stone in this bill where we will be eliminating what we are currently teaching and making sure that our kids are only being instructed in the science of reading.
Representative Gant, any follow-up on that?
No, sir. Thank you.
Okay. Just want to know. Representative Costello, do you have a question, sir?
Thank you, Chair. Madam Chair, just a quick question. I'm reading this and all. It's a good bill on the surface. My question is to you is that does this cover all schools, both private or charter schools, public schools?
You are recognized.
Thank you, Chair. No, this is only for our public school education.
Okay.
Rep. Costello, any follow-up?
Yes, thank you. Once again, what we talked about in the last bill, like a level playing field, could this be established in charter schools also?
Chair, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the question. Yes, I stated in my opening remarks explaining the bill that this does include charter schools.
It does include charter schools. Okay, my mistake. Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Absolutely. Do we have any more questions? Okay, seeing no further questions, we will move on to public testimony. And we do have some appearance cards. Let's see. So we have Mr. Barney Bishop. Please make your way to the podium, sir.
Thank you. As I mentioned to you before, I'm the chairman of the board of a public charter school. So we are already taking to heart exactly what, Madam Chair, you and your staff have done in this great bill. We teach phonics, and I have taken parents and, for the first time ever, two school board members, one of which was never been of supporting of school choice before. She's now a big, huge proponent of school choice. And I sat in on phonics. And this, of course, if you look at me, is not the way I learned how to spell. I learned how to spell by memory. But kids now are learning how to sound out words, and phonics is absolutely the way to go. And our kids are doing really great on the standardized testing. We also teach, as the chairman has indicated, we teach Singapore math. Why? Because we want our kids, our scholars, we call them scholars, we want our scholars to compete on a worldwide future competition economy. And to do that, our kids are going to need to learn mathematics. Now, I have to admit to you, I was barely a C student in general math. It was the toughest class I had to pass when I went to college was math. And I took the least amount of math class I could possibly have had. Boy, do I wish I had had some kind of help in mathematics. And, of course, we didn't have calculators back then, and I'm not sure I can always use the calculator the right way now. But this is a fantastic opportunity for students. Finally, I'd like to say that on the reading, that we just had a presentation by Step Up for Students. They offer a reading scholarship of $500. So we are encouraging all of our parents at our classical school to apply for that $500. They can use that any way they want. They can hire a private tutor. They can help pay for some of our teachers to tutor them after the hours. In closing, what I'd like to say is this, representatives, for you, those of you, I'm a public education graduate from school in Miami, in Carroll City, which is a very poor part of town back then and now. Proud graduate of Carroll City Marching Chiefs. But let me tell you, representatives, parents aren't walking to Tallahassee Classical. They're running. They're running because they want reading, writing, and arithmetic taught to their children. They want a Western civilization education. Choice is everything. So thank you, Madam Chair, for this bill. We support it completely. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bishop. Go Chiefs. And you might not have learned math the right way, but you sure learned how to dress, because you sure are a sharp dresser, sir. Next up, we have Mr. Ryan Kennedy from Florida Citizens Alliance. And you are recognized, sir.
Thank you again. Again, Ryan Kennedy with the Florida Citizens Alliance. We are a strong supporter of this bill. I can't tell you how much we've advocated for phonics being taught when it comes to reading and early intervention. I think everybody can agree that early intervention can really solve a lot of issues in all different aspects of life, but especially within education. And also with mathematics, it's really key that we have a good foundation when it comes to mathematics. We would highly encourage that Singapore math is looked at. A lot of schools have implemented it, and it's a great program. And then lastly, especially, dyslexia is on the rise. A lot of kids are getting it, and it's increasing in America. So it's really good that this bill is going to address that and try to help with that, because that should not affect a child from being able to become a great part of society. So thank you.
Thank you, sir. Up next, we have someone waving in opposition. We have Alice Kearse from the Foundation of Florida's Future waving in opposition. Excuse me. Oh, I'm sorry. I was a little bit dyslexic in my seeing where these boxes were. Waves in support, Alice Kearse. Let's get this on the record. Alice Kearse, Foundation for Florida's Future, waving in support. Also, thank you, Chris, for circling that and using your teaching skills. Ms. Sarah Massey, Florida Chamber of Commerce, also waves in support. Seeing no further public testimony, members, we're now in debate. Any members wishing to debate on the bill? Seeing none. Chair Trabulsi, if I may say something, this is a fantastic bill. And thank you for always, always looking out for Florida students, especially in the area of reading, but now adding math to it, it's fantastic. Thank you so much. I look forward to seeing this bill as it keeps on moving forth. Members, excuse me, Chair Trabulsi. I'm sorry. No more debate. You're recognized to close on your bill.
Thank you, Chair. And thank you, Alice, for changing your mind in his dyslexic moment. I appreciate your support. I would be remiss if I did not thank staff for working so hard, not only in this committee, but on this bill especially. It's been a labor of love, and I appreciate you all so very much. Thank you. And I want to say, again, I am presenting this bill to you, but this is our bill. This is our committee bill, and this is a result of all of our committee weeks. Lots of presentations, sometimes hours of presentations, really great questions and robust debate and demanding answers and solutions for our children in Florida. So thank you for putting this together with me and allowing me to present it to you. I'd just like to say a few things that we already know. Until third grade, children learn to read. After third grade, children read to learn. A child's math knowledge in kindergarten predicts later academic achievement. In this committee, we've learned that less than 50% of third grade students are reading on grade level. Let that sink in. Half our kids. We also learned that from 2022 NAEP scores that only 39% of fourth graders and 29% of eighth graders in Florida are at or above proficiency levels. In mathematics, only 41% of current fourth grade students are proficient in grade level math, while only 23% of our eighth graders are on grade level. How is it possible that we have a statewide graduation rate of 87% with less than 50% of our students on grade level by eighth grade in reading and math? We were informed that after eighth grade, these students receive intensive instruction to get them over the finish line. The time for intensive instruction and intervention is while children are building their foundational knowledge. And that is just what this bill does. Evidence-based instruction grounded in the science of reading. Identifying opportunities as early as VPK. VPK students that are underperforming are now going to have the opportunity to get intervention before they enter kindergarten. Creating and implementing plans and offering resources for teachers, students, and parents before a child fails. And following improvement with progress monitoring. But let's kind of talk beyond the grade. Children who lack foundational skills in reading and math, they lack confidence. They exhibit behavioral problems. They have an increased dropout rate. They lack critical thinking skills and motivation. And they lack problem-solving skills. 88% of students who do not graduate from high school struggle with foundational skills in reading and math. The disproportionate amount of those that don't graduate are filling our pipeline to prison and not prosperity. The chilling truth is the statistics we refer to are more than numbers. These are children. These are our children. And I believe that this bill will not only produce positive outcomes, but I truly believe it's going to save lives. And with that, I close.
Having closed on her bill, Kendall, please call the roll.
Representatives Alvarez.
Yay.
Baker.
Yes.
Beltran.
Yes.
Benjamin.
Yes.
Burfield.
Yes.
Kennedy.
Yes.
Casello.
Yes.
Daniels.
Yes.
Fine.
Yes.
Franklin.
Absolutely yes.
Gant.
Yes.
Garcia. Gonzalez-Pittman.
Yes.
Rizzo.
Oh, yes.
Tomko.
Yes.
And Yeager.
Yes.
Trabulsi says yes, and, too.
Yeah, yeah.
Chair Trabulsi.
Sorry.
Members, by your vote, show that PCB on student outcomes will be reported favorably. Congratulations, Chair Trabulsi.
Thank you.
Are we switching? Am I?
Members, as a reminder, our next meeting will be Wednesday, March 15th.
We're waiting for Chair Trabulsi.
Let's see. Chair Trabulsi has left the building. Maybe? No? Let's see. We're going to just go ahead and close it out. Okay. So with no further business before the committee, Chair Fine, Representative Fine moves that we rise. Without objection, the meeting is adjourned.
Great job. Thank you.